One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV. It is the Red Men podcast, where we talk about all things Liverpool Football Club. I am Paul Machin.
Have we lost Sam already?
Yeah, it's his nose. I am Paul Machin. I'm joined in the studio by Chris Pajak from home. We've got James Sutton and potentially Sam Walker as well, somewhere down the line. There he is. We've got a kickoff question that we're going to get through, and then we're going to talk about our thoughts and feelings. Let's have a bit of a group counselling session before we jump on Roy Keane's head, and then look ahead to a massive 7 days for the Reds as well. The kickoff question this week comes from Buddy, who's at Critical Path G, and he says, what is the best intro song from a Saturday morning cartoon from your youth? He says the X-Men intro was an absolute banger. What you got for me, Chris?
I didn't read the question, and it's quite hard. So the one that springs to mind first of all is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah,
because everyone knows everywhere to that. Yeah. I think that's a banger.
Party! Yeah,
sorry. Yeah. So there we go. That's
absolutely okay. Cool. You mean Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles?
Yes.
Okay. As it was for us in the UK, because apparently we weren't allowed to have ninjas in England. Bad times. James Sutton.
Tory Britain, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. James, what was your favourite cartoon intro of your childhood?
You've dropped this on me. Normally, someone sends me the question in advance and gives me a little, even just 10 minutes just to prep it. And now I'm trying to, I'm still half asleep and I'm trying to get my brain to go back to kind of 20 years in the past. 30. I thought I could sneak that one in and no one would notice.
Not without your telly makeup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you were being cast in an American high school drama, maybe you'd get away with that. Like, you know what I mean? But yeah, this is.
Did I tell you what someone tweeted me the other week about me, about how I look?
Go on.
Did I tell you that? Someone tweeted me and said, how is it that he looks 45 and 21 at the same time?
You get that, don't you?
Yeah.
Which, I can accept. Kids' cartoons. But I wasn't really a massive cartoon fan. I used to love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, man. I'm going to have to go with you and go down the turtle route. I had all the toys as well when I was a kid, man. Like the little... The Splinter and the Shredder and the little fella, what was his name? Krang. I had all that gear. Yeah,
they were hard to get hold of as well, James.
Oh God,
there was Christmas was it 89 when it was almost impossible
was
to get hold of them.
National turtle shortage. And in typical Scouse style, I apologise to people who turned up for a Liverpool podcast. We'll get there. some Scouse fellas on the market. Mate got hold of like black molds of turtle figures, and my dad come home with these slightly wrong coloured turtles, perfect shape with all, but it was doing all just a bit crappy.
They didn't look like they'd had a stroke. The mold was right.
The molds were the right. They were the right molds, but it was like slightly cheaper plastic. The colours were all slightly off on them, and the weapons were all a bit flimsier. But that was like in Liverpool in 89 and 90. That was the only thing you could.
That sounds like the ones that I had.
Yeah.
To be honest, and I didn't know they were black. So nice one, Dad. You've ruined my life.
Yeah. I must admit, this question comes slightly easy to me because I literally have a playlist on YouTube of all the best 80s and 90s cartoon intros. Sam, have you got any suggestions?
Yeah, this one's not necessarily because I enjoyed it. It's just because it's the one that kind of did me head in the most. And I can just remember my little cousin always playing it on the keyboard all the time. And it was the Rugrats intro. And I just remember it just burning my head out all the time because I spent a lot of time with my little cousin when I was younger. He was 2 years younger than me. So when I was too old to deal with that kind of shit, it was just on all the time. So yeah, loved the Turtles, loved loads of other cartoons, but that one will never leave me from annoying the life out of me. So yeah, unfortunately, it's the Rugrats for me.
Yeah. Oh, go on, Paul. What are your top five?
DuckTales.
Oh yeah, nice.
Because DuckTales, is literally one of the greatest songs ever made.
Rescue Rangers.
Rescue Rangers is a good shout. Yeah, a lot of those like that. Top Cat. A bit 1950s. It's a good song to be fair. Centurions is good. Mask was good. You've mentioned Turtles, absolutely outstanding. Pole Position is an absolute banger as well. Jason the Wheeled Warriors, all excellent stuff.
What was the Dungeons and Dragons theme?
Not really a theme. It was a bit spoken word. I had Sky in the 90s, so that you get up and it was like the DJ Cat Show and something else, the Fun Factory, and it'd be like 5 hours of cartoons. Transformers, there you go, Transformers, absolutely smashed it. Let us know yours.
Hang on a minute, Daddy's working my ass.
Daddy's talking about cartoons on the internet.
James, is that you?
He's talking about Rugrats, for goodness sakes.
Here's a shout. John Piper in the live chat says Thundercats. Thunder.
Yes. Thundercats.
That is a belter of a tune. Biker Mice from Mars, Chris.
Oh, yeah. There you go. We used to sing that.
We did, yeah.
So we were about 19.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Pink, it was like the pre-town shout, wasn't it? Yeah. Let's rock! Hurrah!
Pinky and the Brain, says James Wilkins.
What are we going to do today?
Tiny Toons, the Tiny Toons, they're all little loony. Yeah, brilliant, says James Wilkins. Outside shelf for Earthworm Jim, I don't think many would get that one, but I do, and you're a hero for saying it. Right, everyone, we're going to dive into the Liverpool chat. I know most of you would probably prefer we just went through 80s and 90s cartoon intros rather than talk about the state of the Reds at the minute, but we will do. But first, we have got a brand new collaboration. It is the ultimate collaboration of style and us with our Beers of Anfield Road collection available. We've got the beer mats and we've got a range of clothing as well. Have a little look at this.
Hey everyone, welcome back.
Just having a little conversation about parental roles and when working from home. James just got to kick back, just like, yeah. And that's none of my concern. Absolutely fantastic. Beers of Anfield Road, Chris, I'm really excited by the stuff that we've got up. We've got loads more to come. There's a competition run at the moment.
Yeah, so it's our pinned tweet over on Twitter right now. And if you go over there, there's a competition basically to celebrate the collaboration with Beers of Anfield Road. So you just need to tell us your top three, reply to that tweet, retweet the post, of course, and we'll pick two winners to receive three T-shirts of your choice. And we'll also release the top three designs, the player designs. So Dini Wijnaldum, one Sadio Mane, Bobby Firmino, Alize, Virgil van Dijk, they're all absolutely quality.
Boss. And so Chris very much went to look down the barrel of a camera, and the man in control of switching cameras was stood behind the camera at that point. So I think Si's back in the booth right now. Si, if you don't mind, obviously there's less of a podcast listeners, but just for people on YouTube, the beer mats are available as well. We've got them for sale, and they are absolutely like beyond great in terms of the design. There's King's Ale, there's Millie, Genuine Draft. We're going to ignore the fact that there's a Taki Minamino one, but you know, he'll come back. Jürgen Klopp's got a long term plan for him, and you can be on the ground floor and all that. They're amazing. They're up for sale on the shop store as well, so yeah, get involved. We'll put the links in the live chat and in the info underneath the podcast as well. Right, Chris.
Yeah,
you had a good day off.
I did.
To recover from all this. How you feeling about the Reds at the minute?
All right, funny enough, me and Sam were talking just before we went live and stuff like that, and I'm a bit like, obviously I'm still devastated that we got tonked by Manchester City, and deservedly so. I think, you know, the performance wasn't good enough, and, you know, the performance over the last few weeks just hasn't been good enough on a consistent basis. But right now, I think, you know, everybody knows exactly where Liverpool are. Like, there's no more false hope. I mean, Liverpool are in a battle for top four right now, and we need to focus on that, and the players need to focus on that, and you know, the title's not within our reach anymore. Yeah. It may come back to us. I very much doubt that it will. Mm-hmm. It's been what we thought for a couple, probably a month and a half, 2 months now, isn't it? That, you know, it's City's to lose, really.
Yeah.
So Liverpool can just get on with focusing on what they can control, and you know that's not a bad position to be in.
Yeah. No. It confirmed to me. I think, you know, I've been espousing my belief that Liverpool aren't really at City's level at the moment, and that might change, but based on what we've seen, all that game did. There's a temptation thing you kind of have to do, I think, with football, and you have to almost be shown to be seen how angry and how wound up and how everything makes you super emotional and all that. I didn't really feel that about the game in the end. I'm annoyed because I don't like seeing Liverpool win, but it hasn't broken my heart. Sorry, it hasn't broken my heart, and it hasn't devastated me in the way that result has in previous seasons. Like, you know, when we go away to the Etihad and it's 12 millimetres or whatever away, like, that's galling. This did was confirm the suspicions, and you kind of talking about them. You know, I've been talking about this for a week or so, Sam, that I just don't think we're at that level. And if we'd managed to turn the corner there, that would have been great. But all it really did was confirm the suspicions that, as Chris says, realistically this season, Liverpool need to be... They need to aim to finish second and have a good run at the Champions League, because the title just looks like it's a bit beyond us.
Yeah, I mean, even if we'd have beaten Manchester City on Sunday, it didn't matter what score it was or the performance of it. Do we really think that there's enough teams in the Premier League with no fans, bear in mind, who can take enough points off this Manchester City side to enable us to go on some form of run, which we haven't shown we're capable of doing all season yet, have we, to be able to win the league anyway? So I think if we're going to actually sit down and be, you know, try and be non-biased fans, I think even if we'd have won, it would have been a step in the right direction, but I don't think we would have really been any closer to actually, you know, grabbing the title race by the horns. I think it would have been a fantastic marker for us moving forward, but it would have been false hope. I think City will win the league. I think we will comfortably, in my opinion, get top four. I'm sure we'll go into the sort of chaos around us later. But yeah, I mean, also the other thing about that game that sort of got me is it was the manner of it. We didn't play well and lose. We didn't get absolutely torn to pieces. The one person, the whole team, you expect not to shat the bed three times or two and a half times. So I think in a season where literally anything that can go wrong is going wrong, it's just another tick box check. Then, yeah, it's not going to be our year in the league this year. That's it, really.
Mm. It is. It's gotten, isn't it, James? Because, you know, we've gotten so used to just being really good and seeing Liverpool win loads and loads of football matches. And I wanted us to win another title this season because it feels a bit ethereal, the one that we won last year. You know, we didn't really get to embrace it in the way that we should have done. It's been, you know, people keep talking about these, like, the end of the documentaries. There's a couple of, like, documentaries around Liverpool winning the title. I can't bring myself to watch them because, I mean, it'll help, and I'll eventually get to them, but it just reminds me of what I didn't get more than what we actually got, you know. So when you're now into the season, you were hoping among all hopes that we just go again and we get another one boxed, and hopefully the world's in a condition where you can go and celebrate two titles. That's part of my sort of problem with this.
Yeah, I think in the aftermath of a defeat like that at home, that does put the kind of final nail in our title hopes coffin. It's very hard to sit here in the aftermath of that and not think about the wider context and not think about the long term goals and the long term plan for this football club. Am I still there? Because everyone else is frozen.
Yeah, I can hear you, mate.
Just them that's frozen. Okay, then cool.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay. Well, it's just me and you then, Sam.
Yeah, let's go for goal.
Let's go for it. I would say I feel quite, I don't know how you feel, but I feel quite bullish about the whole situation now. I think with the league, you know, being gone, there's a freedom now. There's a weight off our shoulders that's been there for the past couple of months, with us knowing full well that we're not going to compete for this title this season. Now that that's gone, I feel weirdly positive about everything. And I know that's probably not a kind of popular belief. But look, you know, we've got a really exciting tie against Red Bull Leipzig to win. That's super exciting. There's no reason why we can't go really far in the Champions League or win the thing. I fully expect us to get top four. There's not four teams better than us in the Premier League right now. There just fucking isn't. Crisis or no crisis, you know. I don't envisage a world where we finish out of the top four. I just don't think there is. And also, you know, Jurgen Klopp's got another rebuild in him here. You know, we've got Klopp down for another few years. He's tied to a contract. There's room to manoeuvre and rebuild. And that's something that we've never really been, certainly in our lifetime, Sam, have never been part of. We've never been champions of England and had to rebuild. We've never been there. You know, you look, Ferguson's had to do it, Mourinho had to do it. We've never been in that position. I find that really exciting going forward. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, we've got players who we know are going to be going out of the door. You know, we've got, I think Jack's probably going, Origi, Gini Wijnaldum obviously coming to the end of his contract. I think there's massive questions to be asked about Oxlade-Chamberlain, Naby Keita again, you know, another one that I think, you know, unless he does something really, you know, starts to find some consistency with his fitness as well as his form, I think he's going to be, you know, he could possibly be another one that's going. And Taki, you know, the jury's out whether or not he comes back. Yeah. You know, that's 6, 7, 8 players off our wage bill, off our books. The opportunity to, and we're a big draw right now as well, don't forget. You know, we're a massive draw. We've got the best manager in the world, the best goalkeeper in the world, the best centre back in the world, one of the best midfielders in the world, the best striker in the world. You know, we've got so many pieces in play that it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we bring in 4, 5, 6 more world class players to elevate us to the next level. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty bullish about the whole thing.
Yeah,
I'm you know, I was fuming on Sunday night, as I'm sure everyone else was. I had to close my social media immediately, and I had to put my phone on airplane mode because I started getting texts off City fans. Can't do banter, can they, man? They're the most fucking joyless, humourless bunch I've ever met. Like, they, I just got loads they, of like.
I mean, think about the bus.
It mean.
Think about the bus. Hi, James.
Oh, he's here.
Think of, you know, it's like everything, you know. You're right. I think Man
well
City
done,
fans.
Shorten, by the way.
Yeah, well done. The man who gets professionally paid to talk for a living has just bailed us out there for technical issues. You know, I agree on that without getting too lost down the rabbit hole of talking about Man City fandom and all that. But they are, I find them a strange bunch. You know,
very strange.
you know, the things that you would normally have a laugh, even like Man United fans who I find it very, very difficult to talk about football with, and vice versa, by the way, because I think we're polar opposites in that regard, or maybe two positives, and that's what pushes them apart, to be more scientifically correct. But like, you say things to Man City fans that you would say to normal football fans, and they would normally go, oh, yeah, and they give you this deadpan, straight, like talking about the coach greeting thing, when you go, oh, la, 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 and they go, that was basically a terrorist attack, and you're like, oh, right, okay.
It's because they've got no reference point. They haven't had years of football. They just haven't. The majority of their fans have only come along in the past 10 years at best. You know, they haven't got reference points. They don't know what they were. Terrorists. Behave yourselves. It was a bottle thrown at a bus. Are we still talking about that shit? Yeah, I'm with you, man.
Yeah. Sam. Roy Keane called us bad champions. Bad champions. What a fucking knobhead. I disagree, I agree in so much as we've clearly not retained our title, so that's bad, but like I think he's a very entertaining sideshow, Roy Keane, and I think Sky's coverage is much more fun for having him there, because he's just such a mardy old tit, isn't he? But like, this is my problem with this, and I said this when we were doing the Final Word show. The problem is Liverpool's problems are actually quite simple. It's just that we're missing loads of really good footballers. So it's hard to say Liverpool have been crap, or Liverpool have got a general malaise and all that kind of stuff, but it hasn't stopped people doing that, because you can't. I'm struggling to have this conversation over and over again. So people are trying to find new angles, and he's another one, and he's quite a loud voice, and he's quite a public voice. But he's wrong.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we? I think I love Nicky Richards, because he's a character, and he brings something different to the studio. But when you've got him and Roy Keane in the studio alongside Souness, what you lack between the three of them is any actual sort of analytical insight. So Roy Keane comes out with these brash statements, and there's no actual sort of real life backup to what he says. Like, he's instantly been compounded all over social media with, how many times did United win the league on 75 points? Or how many times did you not win the league the next season? Or what happened to United in 2014, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So all these statements that he make, they're not really backed up well with actual reality. And another thing that what really annoys me of this whole sort of media outcry at the moment about Liverpool is, oh, Liverpool not good enough, they've bottled it, this, that and the other. So here's one thing leading off from the Man City fans thing. Liverpool Football Club is probably the club that relates more to its fans and relies more on its fans to create special moments. I would say, and I'd hope I don't offend too many City fans, but Man City football team don't rely on their fans to be great. They've got an unbelievable manager, a member of staff for each player, and a ridiculously sized squad backed by their owners and their state. They don't need the fans to elevate them to win anything, and it's proven right now. Liverpool do. And so that's playing a big part. But the injury situation's insane. And the fact that Carragher even won't now acknowledge that it's playing a huge part of our problems. Last season, all we heard was Laporte ruining Manchester City's title hopes. I've got in front of me the game Laporte returned to Man City's team last year. They won 1-0 away at Sheffield United on January the 21st. He started. So he didn't even miss half a season. He got injured, I think, in September and came back in January. Maybe about a half a season he missed. And that was 25 points was down to Laporte last season. All the media bought it. All the millions spent on City. That was the reason why. Yet when we've got 8 players a game missing for Liverpool, including the defensive Messi, it's not acceptable. Liverpool is not good enough. What's with that? Why can't it just
why?
Be clear?
Do you know why it is? Because people don't like Liverpool. And I think that's it. No, but it's true though, isn't it? Because we spent years looking for chinks in the armour of Manchester United and hoping that there'd be like something that, you know, that was a sign of them, a deeper malaise or a deeper crumble and all that. They're loving it because they've had loads and loads of times where they've had to suck it up and talk about how great Liverpool are. And it must be really pleasant. I've had so much fun the last 5 years talking to Man United fans, going, oh, you're a big club. oh, your big club deserves better.
You deserve better than what you've seen at the moment. And they don't. Look, everyone hates monopolies just in general, don't they? And Liverpool and Manchester United are the two most successful sides in English football. And from a standpoint of, you know, do the Premier League want more owners with loads of money, then it's good that City can come in and spend the money and win the league and stuff like that, isn't it? And, you know, I think it does kind of, you know, just sort of say to everybody that you can still win the league. It's not just Liverpool and Manchester United. And, you know, for me, it'd be, you know, it's boring sat here every week going, well, the reasons are this, this, this and this, and the reasons haven't changed for 3 months. It gets boring saying the same reasons over and over. The difference with Souness as opposed to the others is, he says things like they're a statement. Just like us, they're just opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He's just thinking that way. It's just that he gets more airtime than anybody else and he's a sour cunt. You know what I mean? So it comes across like he's just being dead salty and stuff. And he is, but like it's no different to any other 50-year-old Manchester United fan would say exactly the same. It's no different than every United fan who's hiding behind the Cristiano Ronaldo picture still on Twitter saying exactly the same thing. You know, it's that's all it is. He's just a Twitter opinion and nothing more. Whereas what you get from Gary Neville is you get that saltiness, but like Sam was saying there, he's actually got stuff to back it up.
Yeah.
You know, he thinks about the game in a different way. I actually really like Souness and Roy Keane from a TV spectacle. They annoy the living daylights out of me. But there's also that, like, it's why people drive slowly past car crashes. You know, it's the same thing. You're waiting for Souness to say something that's going to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Isn't it? That's what Souness does.
Yeah, it's no, but it's true, isn't it? And this is what we're getting with media coverage. Man United having to live in it. Liverpool had it in the 90s and the early noughties, James, where all of your best players become pundits and then your team's not as good and they've got the glory days to kind of slag it off. United, the ex-United guys have been taking pelters for years now as pundits, and then Liverpool's just a nice easy target. And the simple fact is because no one really cares about Manchester City, that's the problem. Goes both ways. They haven't got banter. The fans don't have banter because they've never had anyone to banter with. They've had a one-sided banter for their entire lives with Manchester United fans in their own city, and they've never had a genuine rivalry along the way. Like, we've had, Liverpool have had loads. It's funny. You know, we've had the Man United one, we've had the Everton one, but we had a spell where Chelsea were a big rival, we had a spell where Arsenal were a big rival, there will have been spells where Leeds were big rivals, etc, etc. And then City just don't.
No. City were bought because of their proximity to Manchester United,
yeah.
Right, not because of the fan base of the football club.
Yeah.
That's the thing, you know, they needed somewhere, they would have gone with Manchester or London as the two cities to buy a club in, because they're the easiest places, if you get them playing well, where you can go and get players in, because Manchester United have proven it over the years, you can get top draw players into Manchester, it's a good enough city for them to live in. London proves it time and time again, people go just because it's London,
yeah.
Not because of the football club. Manchester City are lucky that they are where they are, as in closeness to Manchester. Being in Manchester is one of the reasons they were bought, not because of the fan base or the club or the history of the club.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just that it was fucking cheap and you can get players there if you get good.
Yeah, that's it. And that is the thing, as we say, James, it just doesn't, I say, no one's got a depth of ill feeling towards, because people hate Chelsea because they were the first to come in with loads of money, and then City do it and we've kind of grown a bit numb to all that, and people feel a bit sorry for them, because, and people actually, I don't mind their rise. You know, they went down to the lower leagues of footy and came back up again, so, you know, the people who've been there the whole time are all, that's fine, you know, they cause no strong emotional feelings. That's the reason why no one talks about Man City, because they don't drive clicks and no one has any inbred hatred for them.
Yeah, that's you've hit the nail on the head, mate. And it's I don't want to come across as kind of self-righteous, but there is a kind of really easy solution to this if you're a Liverpool fan. Just don't fucking read or watch it. Like, there's enough platforms and enough really good fan-driven content out there right now, including the Redman TV, by the way. You don't need to listen to any of the noise. If you want brilliant football writing, get yourself subscribed to The Athletic. The Anfield Wrap also do incredible stuff. You've got live watch-alongs on the Redmen TV with every single game. So you don't even need to listen to Patrice Evra or whichever other fucking rent-a-gob they've wheeled out that week to talk about this. you can create your own kind of bubble of really interesting work. Yeah, and I think the only two exceptions are Carragher and Neville. They're the only two on Monday Night Football that I will tune in for, because it's interesting stuff. Outside of that, I don't. I can see your point. Why you might enjoy Chris Graham Souness and that kind of side of it. But for me, it's just nonsense. They don't say anything that backs up my own views on this football club or even what I see on the pitch. It's just narrative and stories done to create clicks and done to create furore on social media. And here we are, 2 days after the match, talking about it. So they've kind of won. The best thing to do is genuinely just ignore it. Like I say, subscribe to The Athletic, subscribe to The Anfield Rap, subscribe to The Red Men, devour all the content, and I promise your life will be a shit ton better for it.
Well, the thing for me there
Thanks,
is,
James.
You know, yeah, but thank you, first of all. I just don't get annoyed by it.
Yeah.
Because I believe in my opinions and those of the people that I read and write and, you know, watch and stuff like that.
It's a cunt Morpheus. Yeah. My beliefs don't require that you believe in my beliefs.
It genuinely doesn't fucking matter to me whether Graham Souness thinks that. Liverpool are never going to be the football club where everybody goes, well, aren't they just bloody amazing?
Yeah.
It's never going to be that way. So if you believe in your beliefs, fuck them. What's it matter? Why does everyone get dead annoyed by it? It doesn't, like Roy Keane saying they'll pull a bad chance. That's his opinion, so what?
Yeah.
No, that's true. Well, this is the way broadcast is going now. It's the talk sportification of everything. You know, we see it in fan media as well, by the way. You know, and maybe we do it at times or whatever, and you see it in certain other quarters, which everyone knows. But that's what they are. They're good telly, and they do what Sky requires. This is why Robbie Savage gets hired for things, by the way, because he just used to say shit, and you can then go. Former Manchester United midfielder, former Leicester midfielder, you know, League Cup play winning midfielder, former Welsh international, yeah, you know, BBC's, you know, walking haircut,
Grammy Award nominee,
yeah, you know, this is the thing, isn't it? They've got a really good balance on Sky that makes the television more entertaining, which is good. It's a reaction to TalkSport plus us that means they've had to take a little bit of a step up and all this, so it's a bit more banter, it's a bit more friendly, it's a bit more this and that. But as you say, it's all opinion unless someone can sit there and analytically break something down, and that exists out there in plenty of quarters. You know, Sam, you were talking about the Monday Night Football stuff from last night before we started going live. You know, that's cool. Get what you want from it, but you're right. It is just opinion. It's just annoying, isn't it? When because someone's voice carries so much, people go, he must know more. Well, he doesn't. It's just fucking...
And Roy Keane's probably a fucking reaction to the fact that it was just all Liverpool ex-pros giving his team shit and all that you can't win anything with kids. And he's just grown up watching, you know, as a footy player, watching Liverpool players slag Manchester United off, and he's going, right, I know how to do this job. I'll just do what Hansen and fucking Lawrenson did for years with me.
Yeah.
I'll just do the exact same.
Roy Keane has a really, really simplistic view of football and of football matches. He always has done. You look at any of the kind of biggest statements that he's ever made, they're really just reactionary and basic. There's no nuance there. There's no thought. There's no depth to anything that he says. It's they should have run faster. They should have run faster. Why didn't they run more? They should have tackled it.
That's why
he's rubbish. Well, he's rubbish then. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. He doesn't like it. Doesn't it? It's all reactionary shit. Whereas you can't tune into Soccer AM and expect fucking, you know, an hour long Mel Reddy interview. It ain't gonna happen. If you tune into Soccer AM, you're gonna get Soccer AM fucking stats. That's where we are, man.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm absolutely spot on about that, though. Yeah. Be less impacted by COVID. What are they doing?
You know, yeah, it's, yeah. We shouldn't have
caught
it in the first place.
It's what's funny is again, there's actually someone reacted in the comments who's saying like all I think it says most pundits are ex Liverpool players, which is just a big load of nonsense, isn't it? Absolutely, but there's lots of Liverpool players, ex Liverpool players, but the idea that there's not tons of Manx out there.
Oh, God.
But it's the way it goes. I say that's
That's what it is. And that's why Man United have had a hard time of it, extra hard time of it in the last couple of years, because you've got Roy Keane, you've got Gary Neville, you've got Paul Scholes, you've got Patrice Evra as a bare minimum, who are all over absolutely everything. And they're just so saddened by the Man United they've had to watch over the years. And that just feeds and that winds up the fans and blah, blah, blah. And I recognise it because God knows, again, that's what Liverpool had to live with in the 90s. Alan Hansen going, oh, that's like Lost of the Finding every single fucking week on Match of the Day. While Neil Ruddock is just flopping about the place trying to clear the ball.
You know what, Paulo? Do you know what the best thing is that they've got no excuse either. So Roy Keane go, oh, we've got loads of injuries. Oh no, we haven't. The manager shit as well. Oh yeah, but we don't spend any money. Oh yeah, we spend fuck loads of money. So he's actually got no excuse, has he, for them? So he's trying to dig us out, but really it's because he's got no excuse to why Man U are still shit and he's fucking do everything possible to not be shit and they still are.
Absolutely. Didn't even mention, by the way, Real Ferdinand and technically Michael Owen, who they can have as well. Shy Banstead with the super chat said, was that Keane or Father Ted?
I think he was talking about yours, because when you did your impression, I was like, that's Father Ted.
No, dude. right. Trick Jones.
I hear you're a racist now, Father.
You're a racist now, Father.
What's the church's position on racism?
Trick Josh.
Do you remember the episode where they got lost in the bra section?
Oh, the Christmas special.
That's basically what's happening on your Facebook at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
The digital
yeah.
version of that.
We're having a conversation about this Facebook advertising. I bought something pleasant for my wife / more for me for Valentine's. And now every fifth advert.
Oh, my hello.
It's just breasts. It's amazing. Trick Josh. So Steve Nichol on ESPN reckons Liverpool need to rebuild. They should have done it last year. He reckons the front three have to shoulder some of the blame. How would you rebuild a team? I don't disagree with this idea that the front three, because let's look ahead from this now, because we've got no choice. The season doesn't end. We can't just fucking pack up. And we have this in life. And I think the older you get, or maybe it depends on how your life goes, of course, you face these circumstances in life where you're just like, I'd love to give up here. I'd love to give up and not have to deal with this. But unfortunately, you're like, I've got no choice. And I found that with raising children has that impact on you. I can't not have another night's sleep. No, reset, control, alt, delete, anything.
Put it back in there.
Get it back in. You know, no, I can't. But you do. You've got to find a way to knuckle down and get on. And that's where Liverpool are. And to the point, I disagree that Liverpool need a rebuild, because I think rebuild feels to me like a 2 or 3 year process where you're absolutely cut, where you scythe a lot of shit away and you start again. We're lucky that the best players we've got are still in the right age. But I do agree that if Liverpool are going to get themselves out of this, Chris, there's a whole bunch of things, and we'll talk about the centre-halves in a second. But there needs to be... To ask more from Salah is... I think it's too much. He's the top goalscorer in the league by 3 goals. He's doing his part. But we need more from Firmino, we need more from Mane, and you need more from the other established world-class players.
I can't get behind the full rebuild just yet. For the fact is, we've not seen what this squad can do with everybody fit and available. And for me, you know, there's layers to this, isn't it? Let's start off with Klopp's philosophy. Klopp's philosophy is to work with a small squad of really good players, and because he finds that you can get your message across, you get more out of each player and all that type of stuff. If you want Klopp to do a rebuild, that's probably the first thing that needs to change. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to change, because Klopp is going to continue to work with a small squad. It's how he works with them. He understands it. He knows he can get the best out of, let's say, an 18, 19 strong group of players. That's got to change if you want to do a rebuild. That's not going to change anytime soon. Can you refresh the front three? I think we've seen him try that in the summer with the signing of Jota. He's out. Okay. What people are saying, I believe, when they say a rebuild, is they mean, for the most part, all the lads, Shaqiri, Origi, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Naby Keita, all the lads that aren't involved in the first team and everyone's fit and available need changing because they're not good enough. I think that's what most people are saying. Mm. And that is right. If Liverpool are going to go into a season with 8 injuries again every year, we definitely need a rebuild if that's the case. If we get back to a position where everybody's fit and available, and you're asking Ox to come in for 15 games a year, and asking Shaqiri to 15 and Jota for 15, I think they're good enough for that.
Yeah.
Because it's different to having 5 of them on the pitch at one time. If you're telling me Liverpool are going to get these injuries every year, then I'll go, we need a rebuild of the squad because the squad's not big enough, it's not deep enough, and the players can't, five of them can't come in and the team be the same. There is no side in the history of football that where you can take five or six lads out who can go and defend the title. It's just not the way that it's done. It's never going to be the way that it's done. Yeah. So what are you asking for? Are you asking for a rebuild or are you asking for less injuries?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you're right. There's probably a middle ground in there, isn't there, James, where it'd be nice if there's a couple of lads who were lacking, who it's not because of the current world climate. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that using loads of players to serious career-ending, potentially knee injuries is to do with COVID. It's not. But what I mean is, like, Naby Keita is the prime example of this, because there's a lad who's bought the right idea. You got and you spent £50 million on a lad to improve your first team. And he did. He was in that first 11. Every big game we played when Naby Keita was fit, he was in that team without a doubt. He was bought to transform. He was bought alongside Fabinho to change the dynamic of our midfield. And he's never been able to live up to that potential. But that's what you need to do. It's not about saying get rid of Oxlade-Chamberlain and get rid of Keita and get rid of this and that. Because I think people think we need to rebuild, we need to buy better understudies. That is the fucking, that is the guaranteed shortest path to failure, is buying second choices. And this is why it's difficult. You need to go out and buy lads who are better than our current first team. And here's why, when I hear people say FSG should have invested and we should have done more in the summer. Well, we did. Chris said it. We went out and we bought a better centre midfielder in Thiago. We bought a better forward. He was in much better form than, like, let's say, Mane's been in this season. In Jota. And okay, yeah, we bought cover. And then, you know, and I know it's taken a while, but we've then gone and bought another young understudy centre-half in Kabak as well. What I'm saying is you have to go and buy amazing footballers. And that's not as simple as go and buy amazing footballers. But if it was, then yeah, let's go and do that.
Yeah, you're right. Both of you are both, you and Chris are both right. I don't think it is as easy as just saying we're going to replace, you know, squad players. It's not that's not really going to fix this rebuild that we're suddenly kind of faced with. I was saying to Sam before, the whole thing really excites me. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Jurgen and the backroom staff do with this first team, because, you know, last season was a bit of a freak. I know we had a couple of injuries. You know, we lost the goalkeeper for the first part, and you know, Fabinho's out, and you know, there was issues, but it wasn't as bad as it is. It's been this. I mean, this season's been, it's been unbelievable. I can't think of another title winning side that has been so decimated the following season, when there's so much hype and there's so much excitement and all the noise is about, yeah, listen, I know we didn't get to celebrate, but wait till we fucking win it this next year. That was what all the chat was about. So to be faced with that kind of disappointment, that's really hard to take. And the players are really feeling it, man. You only have to look at their social medias, man. They're hurting more than we are, man. They know that they need to step up more. And I think, you know, listen, it's a massive end to this season now for so many players. You know, you mentioned there Oxlade-Chamberlain, Naby Keita, huge months ahead for these guys, because make no mistake, they will be out the door. They will. And I know that maybe not part of a rebuild, but you know, you have to have players that can come in, hit the ground running, don't have periods out injured, because even these players that are squad players have had 1, 2, 3 months out, and then they're not playing every week. You cannot have that as a business model. That just doesn't make any commercial sense, as well as sense on the pitch. It just doesn't. We need lads that we can rely on, and they've got Michael Edwards has got a huge job ahead of him now. But it's an exciting one, man. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Your squad players should ideally be in this. So far, Sam, this is how it's worked. We've brought in a better player, and the lad who was in the first 11 becomes the understudy. And then you've got a lad who's in your squad who understands inside and out the tactics. He's integrated into the squad. He's a member, you know, like, he's friends with everyone in there. You can create that unity, and that's how you grow the strength of your squad. There's a point happening on the horizon. If we don't get recruitment or continue to get recruitment right in the coming months and years, that you have to change that approach. Like, we might have to do that with the front three. I'm not sure that Mane or Salah are the kind of lads who you let become your second choice. they'll just go to Barcelona or Real Madrid because they'll be able to do that. But Firmino might be, you know, Firmino might be a lad who wouldn't mind sticking around. He might do another couple, you know, another season or two with a slightly reduced workload while someone else comes in and usurps him. But I don't know that either. Barcelona might come and just go, do you fancy coming and lynching our attack and in a slower league? And he'll be like, yeah, all day, warmer climate, get to sleep in the afternoon. And get to play in front of 90,000 people. Yeah, absolutely. So that's where we have to be sort of careful with this.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you think about, if you go back to the 17-18 Champions League final team, I think Klopp and Edwards have actually been doing this already. We just haven't really noticed it, and a bit of bad luck. So we finished that season with a midfield of Henderson, Wijnaldum and Milner. And I actually believe that he brings in Keita and Fabinho to freshen up that midfield. Now, obviously, only Fabinho stamps his mark on the side, really, doesn't he? We bring on Lallana when Salah gets injured. We sign Shaqiri, who's a more, at the time, definitely a more direct, more energetic replacement player for, say, than Lallana was. And moving forward from that, the next season, well, let's be honest, Joel Matip probably plays in that final should he stay fit all season, but he wasn't fit at the time, was he? So we have Lovren and Van Dijk at the back. The next season, we win the Champions League and get 97 points with Matip and Van Dijk as probably finishing our main centre-halves. The next season, it's Gomez and Van Dijk, so that has changed automatically. I actually think we've tried to replace Wijnaldum two or three times, but he's an absolute beast and a machine so much that he stayed fit and everybody else can't. Keita's broken down.
And probably Hendo as well, to be fair.
Exactly, and Henderson's had to completely change from a 8 to a 6 back to an 8 again, and now he's just this complete player because of all that. And then this summer we bring in Thiago. Curtis Jones has become one of our most important 15-16 players, and Diogo Jota was one of our most important 12-13 players at the time of his injury. So when you look at what we've actually tried to do, he's actually tried to change four or five elements of the team over the 2-3 year period, but unfortunately this season and parts of last with Keita has actually changed the plan. So although I agree, we probably could do a refreshing up a few faces, and I do agree with you on the Salah and Mane thing. I believe one of them will leave. It's just one of them may already have left had the COVID situation not been such bad fortune. But looking forward again, I do actually have a little bit of concern for what we can do in the summer, because we may be planning to sell Salah for £130, £40 million while he's the Premier League's top scorer. He's 29, and the analysis are saying his stats are still going down, say like the Howard Wijnaldum. But we might not be able to do that because Barcelona and Real Madrid are having to remortgage everyone in the club's house. And PSG are struggling to hang on to Neymar and Mbappe as it is. Bayern Munich have just bought Sané. So where are they going to go? We may actually end up with these players till age 30, 31 by proxy. So we have actually got a really, really tough sort of set of circumstances to work within and get those players back. And rebuild Gomez and Van Dijk's
need as you rebuild. Yeah, definitely. But that's the thing, isn't it? Because I don't think there's anything wrong with our model of how we do things. Liverpool are a self-sustaining football club. That's the way we'd have it. I mean, maybe not, but I don't want to speak for everyone, because I'm sure there'd be people who just wish we had bottomless pits of funds. I'm sure that'd be fun. Like, I know Steve McInerney, Steam Company, says it's fun. It's fun just knowing that your club can go out and buy everyone. I bet it is.
Just don't get attached to centre-backs.
Yeah, absolutely. Or full-backs. So I did, you know, there's probably a degree to which, you know, I'm sure I could live in a world if Liverpool had all that money available to us. But I quite like the way it's done. We buy players, we improve players, and then we move certain lads on. They make money. The club doesn't live in debt. It doesn't live beyond its means. It's a really enviable model on and off the pitch. But this is a big challenge, you know, because you're dead right, because COVID means the rules have changed, because all of a sudden, you know, there was £50 million worth of sales that we didn't make in the summer that we absolutely make in a normal world. And what's the then knock-on effect? That's fine. That's that. So you're not selling lads who are £10 to £15 million, which is where our lifeblood, that's how we've sustained this team. Make no mistake, by selling your Sachos and your Brewsters and your Ibs and your Dominic Solanke's, that's how you're able to keep Salah, Mane, Firmino and Van Dijk. But now we're into a world where we're right. I think we could probably do with now cashing in big time on one of the big boys and then going out and making a big splash. But that's Yeah. Get it a fresh challenge.
I don't know. I don't know whether Liverpool need to do that. I can understand it with COVID that they probably do. I think for me, the way that Liverpool had sort of done their business is, you know, gradually, if you think about FSG's tenure on the whole, generally speaking, the transfer fees have gone up. Mm-hmm. Like those £10 million players all of a sudden become 20. You know, sales and buys, by the way, and your big signings all of a sudden 75, 60 odd million pound ones. I think that would have continued. I think Liverpool personally would have just gone up maybe to that £100 million mark for a player, but maybe would have sold someone for sort of 40, 50 million pound as well. I think there's a point where when you establish yourself in the top four and you establish yourself as a champions elect every season or gunning for the title challenges, every year, yeah. challenges, then you do have to sort of make that step. I think it becomes harder to sustain because you can't take those risks in the squad anymore. Whereas when you're finishing between fourth and second every year, you can get away with one being wrong. And Liverpool had it where they didn't get any wrong. And that's probably what propelled us. You are going to get, not every transfer is going to be a hit. Yeah. You know, there are going to be some misses, unfortunately. And, you know, you try to limit them as best you can. But to do that, I think you do have to probably spend a little bit more money.
Yeah.
And I thought the plan would have been get them to that stage and then you then see the fruits of that labour where we do spend a little bit more each year.
You see what Liverpool have done, you know, for all the criticism of FSG, which continues to rear its head whenever Liverpool aren't winning. And that's the only time it happens because it becomes their fault when the players stop sticking the ball in the back of the net, is when the need to go and spend big money occurs, they go out and spend big money. And the evidence is there for us. Now, you could argue it's from big sales, but that's fine. Again, it's all part of the self-sustaining. Sometimes you need to do that. And as I mean, there's a point coming where if all your best players, James, are 29, heading towards 30, Liverpool that won everything in the 70s and 80s, it was even Bob Paisley, maybe, I might be paraphrasing, said, like, let players, you know, grow old on someone else's wage books. And that's the point with that, you know, as you go and we did it. Torres is the best recent example of this, where he was gone, he was done, he was finished, and we absolutely robbed Chelsea of £50 million for him. Now we then went and spunk 35 for Andy Carroll, which made it look a lot less impactful, but that's, you know, that would be a reasonable next step for Liverpool if it is possible.
Yeah, it was similar to Coutinho as well. I felt like we had Coutinho's best years here. You know, yeah. I think
we shouldn't have done. By the way, we shouldn't have done because he should have still had his best years to come, which is why we were so upset about it. And Sterling,
he was a system player.
No, yeah. He's just a not Barcelona and Bayern Munich system, moreover. But yeah, you know, sometimes those opportunities arise to make mega dough, and you're right with what Sam's saying. There's a spreadsheet here and someone's looking at secret graphs and they're going, he's going to reach that downward point. That's the best time in which to capitalise, when we've milked all the best stuff out of a player.
But yeah, I agree, but I think Sam mentioned it before, you know, the graph has been ripped up and been redrawn because of the past 12 months.
Yeah.
You know, I've said on previous, you know, shows, you can't take out essentially all the income of a business. Essentially, shirt sales are well down, and a huge, huge proportion of the Nike deal is based on shirt sales and based on the income that you generate from that. I mean, I'm sure over, you know, there's parts of the Far East where we still sell a lot of shirts, but make no mistake, match day, the fans coming over at that club shop, buying those shirts up, it's the impact has been absolutely huge, not just from ticket sales, but from across the board, you know. And that I can't begin. I'm not a stats man. I'm not a numbers man. But I can't imagine what a headache that's done behind the scenes, looking at, you know, because then it becomes a question of, well, what's your wage bill? How big's your wage bill? Is there anyone you can get off your wage bill? Is someone not performing to the highest level? What can we do to balance that as well? So the whole thing has been really convoluted and coloured by everything that's happened over the past 12 months. I said it before, and I, you know, don't expect us to be spending a lot of money in the summer. It ain't there. It ain't there, and it ain't going to happen. You know, they'll be getting bodies in. Of course they will. But if people are expecting us to be signing Kylian Mbappe, it's not going to happen. It's a pipe dream. You know, we have to be cleverer, and Michael Edwards has to be cuter than he's ever been in the transfer market. These are unprecedented times, man, and they require a lot of nuance, and they require a lot of really tricky work behind the scenes to raise this football club back up to, you know, the lofty standards that we've set ourselves over the past few years. It's going to be tricky.
I think you're right, James, and the wage bill stuff's really interesting. Obviously, if anyone doesn't follow Swiss Ramble over on Twitter, then it's definitely worth doing. And I can't remember the exact figure, but is it Liverpool spends something like 70% of everything on wages? It's a really high percentage, whatever it is. And, you know, obviously the gross sales are down. That doesn't mean we're losing money, but the income's definitely down and stuff like that. Now, people who were there going, well, we want to rebuild and all that type of stuff. And most of the players that they mention aren't in the first team. You know, mm-hmm. we mentioned that before. Some people do think, you know, one in, one out in the front three. Fine. That's going to offset. Liverpool have got a huge wage bill against what their sales are as a company, unfortunately. And what that means is you want to bring in loads of lads to sit on the bench. Well, hang on, bro, are they spending 70%, give or take, I don't know the percentage, of what we earn on wages, and you want to bring in another five lads on 200 grand a week? Yeah. What does that do? You know what I mean? Like that could tip you the other side. You could go into the red doing something like that. It's almost, you can't be too frivolous with it. And that's what allowed us to get where we are. Buddy, you know, Klopp's idea of how he wants to work with a small squad, with being able to actually offer comparable wages with other big clubs around the world. Well, if we had a 30-man squad, we wouldn't be able to offer Salah, Firmino, Mane the wages that they're on with the bonuses that they're expected to get. Because all of a sudden, you've got to spread that wage every week between 30 lads instead of 18. And that's, again, why Klopp was one of the people that FSG wanted. Yeah. Because he knew that he could work within their constraints financially as the football club. And now you might have an issue with that, and loads of people will do.
Yeah.
And you know what? In the grand scheme of things, I might.
Yeah.
But there's nothing we can do about
it. Well, I'll give it a point on all this. Last before we just talk about the current side, is we won the Champions League, and within 3 weeks, everyone was clamouring for the title, like the Champions League hadn't been won, and we won the title, and now 6 months later, everyone's heads are in the toilet because we're not going to win it the next year. Liverpool could change their owners and change to a model where they have got bottomless funds and they win the league every season. If you're not happy now, and you weren't happy in the summer, you're never going to be happy, is the point. So we might as well have a football club that at least runs within its means and is run sensibly and does all the other really good things that it does around and about. Connor S says, personally, I just want to see Henderson and Fabinho back to midfield with a couple of games to see if that helps the attack. Yes, let's do that. I mean, it feeds into the question, doesn't it, Sam, really, of just get Davies and Kabak in. And I wouldn't mind in the short term if it's just Fabinho and Kabak. I'm kind of fine with that. But there is a part of me that just says, get the two centre-backs. They look like they've got sort of quite neatly meshing skill sets. Like looks like we've bought a potential partnership there, even if it's not a great one. But the knock-on impact, I just want to see us with our best fullbacks, our best goalie, our best midfield, our best attack, and a defence of some sort behind them, and see what that looks like. Because what it's doing right now is just a bit shit by comparison.
Well, yeah, this is all linked into what James said before about being really excited for the rest of the season. Now our goals have adjusted realistically. Is we're no longer looking at first, which was going to take a momentous effort to usurp City from where they are. We're now looking at second, third, fourth, and I think by default we'll probably finish third or fourth. With a bit of luck, we push second. But now the adjustments have changed, and we're now looking at the teams around us and their form, and it's like win, draw, win, loss, win. You know, where City's just like win, 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 win. So anyway, but like, so I think now the opportunity is there for Klopp to say, well, actually, due to that, I can now look at maybe taking a few more risks. So I think we don't see Henderson at centre-back for the rest of the season now, unless there's another mini-injury crisis. But yeah, I suppose we shouldn't write that off. I think he's now number eight all season, maybe number six. But I would like to see a world where Kabak and Phillips or Kabak and Davies play centre-back for the next three or four games. A, to build the partnership, and B, to allow Fabinho to get back to what he's doing. If I was Fabinho and Henderson, I'd be banging on the manager's door saying, in that game the other week, that doesn't happen. Half of that doesn't happen if I'm playing in midfield. But you know, whether that happens or not is another matter. But you know full well, in certain other teams and certain other situations, they would have been banging on the door saying, time to get me back in midfield, boss. So I think that's where we start. And also, you know, give him a couple of games off the bench. But I want to see Jota playing with Salah and Mane again. I think Bobby Firmino needs releasing from the side for a while, or play all four. You know, I think we need to see a world where maybe Thiago comes off the bench for a couple of games. and we give Curtis Jones a run out because he looked fantastic against an unbelievable City team. You know, it's now time to start pushing at what's going to happen at the end of this year, next year.
Yeah, definitely.
And everything you're saying there, Sam, starts with the defence. All of those things that you're saying about getting bodies into midfield, getting bringing back bodies up top, all of that starts with having men available that aren't midfielders available, that aren't playing fucking centre-back.
Yeah. That's true, isn't it? True. I mean, look at the league table. Obviously, we're in fourth at time of recording. Man United second, Leicester third, us, Chelsea, West Ham, Everton, Spurs. Like, Man United, two wins in the last five. Leicester, two wins in the last five. Liverpool, two wins in the last five. Chelsea, three wins, albeit consecutively, in the last five. West Ham, three wins in the last five, but they just drew the last game. Everton, two wins out of five. Spurs, two wins out of five. Villa, three wins out of five. Go down the table. Arsenal, two wins out of five. Leeds, two wins out of five. Southampton lost the last five. The point is there, isn't it, Chris? Is that everyone, apart from City, is a bit crap to varying degrees. You're just shuffling the wins round. When you put two or three back to back, you look like you're flying. When you break them up, you look like you're in a massive crisis. For me, that's where Liverpool are at now. Is I've been 10 years we've been doing this channel, and the consistent saying I've had is that
is it the one to beat to finish in the top four? You just have to be less shit than the others.
Absolutely, and that's what it is, and that's why I agree.
Ten years, he has been saying it. Literally, he didn't even need to tell me.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you just need to be the least shit of the good teams to, you know, to get into the top four, to finish fourth. It's a shame because I would be looking away from first, unfortunately. But Liverpool's aim should be to finish second. Because, you know, I think when you come to the end of the, at the moment, it looks like we're being bad champions. But most teams that don't win the league the next season tend to finish second. Still there or thereabouts in the Premier League era. And if you get to the end of the season and you finish second, and if we've had a good run in the Champions League, which is a big ask, I admit, then it's not a great season, not the season we were planning for when we started, but it's enough to be able to go, okay, well, we'll dust ourselves down, get as many players back and go again in the summer. And I look at those teams around us, no one else's form. There's nothing else scary in any of those other teams as far as I'm concerned.
No, everyone's been up and down just like we have, haven't they? And for me, it's about, you know, I obviously want to see those centre-halves come back in. I want to see those centre-halves come in, I should say. I want to see those midfielders get back into the middle of the park because, for me, this is a good basis now where I think if you risk it a little bit, lads, then you might lose a couple of games for playing Davies and Kabak together, but come the end of the season, that last month when they've been playing for 2 months solidly, I think you gain that back.
Yep.
I think there is enough wiggle room where we can take a few risks and still finish in the top four.
Yeah.
We do need to turn that form around pretty quickly, by the way, as well. Yeah. You know, we need to get back to winning games of football. But, you know, we're in a position where we can start trying things for next year. And that's a sorry state of affairs at the same time. But equally, like, If anyone at the football club has concerns over the front three, well, you're only going to know whether the front three are good enough when you put your midfield back together and see what happens with that.
Yeah.
Like, and if you put your midfield back together and the defence are playing okay and the front three still aren't finishing the dinner and still not playing well, then you've got a problem and you need to go and arrest that. But you need to know whether you've got a problem or not. And the only way of doing that is shoving two centre-halves at the back and letting your team play football.
I completely agree on that. I mean, Leicester looming, a win over them would take us above them in the table on goal difference. And that's where it starts. And that's the only slight concern is of what we've seen, with it being that's a game you actually can't afford. You know, we talk about there's a couple of games that you can afford to kind of go, oh, well, you know, whatever. I think the fact that we've lost our last two and now it's Leicester, I do wonder whether we will be brave enough. And that's why I wonder whether we'll see a one step in that direction. Fabinho Kabak for me would be a positive step towards that. But you just never know. There'll have been a full week pretty much to get prepared for that game. We know that with training time, things do change with what Liverpool are doing. So definitely we'll see that. Just lastly, super chat from Trigger. I want a Liverpool away shirt and a third kit shirt. There's never any stock in my size. So at least good to know that either they're still selling or that Nike are a bit crap. Well, let's hope it's the former rather than the latter in that regard. The H gate, mate. Anyway, right.
and we're going to wrap up there. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. One thing that we want to say is obviously thank you so much to everyone who's joined us. Thank you for comments and thank you for dropping likes on videos and leaving reviews on podcasts and all that kind of good stuff as well. We'll get you through. We're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere. We've got no choice but to support Liverpool throughout it. Whether we're miserable and you don't like FSG or you don't like various players or whatever, we're all Liverpool fans at the end of the day. So yeah, we'll all be here come the end of the season. Hopefully Liverpool will have turned things around by then. Sam, James, Chris, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast. We'll be back with another one next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.